Hybrid Cloud Show, episode 29. I'm Aaron.
I'm Gary.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Shane.
Welcome to the show about public cloud, private cloud, and everything in between. Our views here are ours and not those of our employers. Okay, so I want to start today with a bit of a personal experience. So I have learnt the hard way about what farm data is on Seagate hard drives. And I think, Shane, that you have a similar story. I bought a couple of hard drives and they've been sitting in my home lab just churning away, holding some data. Everything seemed fine. When they turned up, I checked them and looked at the smart data to make sure they looked like they hadn't had power on hours before I had them. And then I installed a new version of the operating system that had a new enough version of smart control to check the smart farm data. And it looks as though they, in fact, had 2.5, 3.5 years of use before they turned up at my house. So, Shane, how about you? What's your story?
A very similar story. I bought two hard drives from eBay that were sold as having about 600 hours of usage each. Then I'd known from your disasters that we should check this data. I'm very grateful this Seagate data hasn't been no way to override it and figure it out. But yes, my 600-hour hard drive was running for about 3.5 years as well. So yeah, not exactly what I wanted. Thankfully, the seller seems to have been duped, not them trying to dupe me. So I got a refund, but yeah, total headache.
So aside from decrying the general state of miserable people in the world, I suppose, what are the kind of learnings out of this? The people who sold it to me were also pretty good after I got in touch and told them it had happened. So they offered me a choice. They said I could either get a 15% discount on my already quite cheap drives, or I could get a refund and have that instead. And it got me thinking a little bit about the way that we think about hardware and hard drives and how you actually price that sort of thing when you're choosing hardware for your home labs. What do you think about when you're buying something and the choices you're making about how much to spend on hardware, hard drives, those kinds of things, and what your kind of decision-making process is when you're putting those things into your house?
This was an interesting experiment for me because I haven't really bought a lot of hardware. I just end up repurposing old laptops or just buying some random cheap, crappy USB drives when I need them. But I'm actually like, okay, I'm going to buy a NAS and then buy proper hardware and have ZFS mirroring. I hadn't really thought about the like, okay, I need to actually spend time figuring out what hardware I need. And it was terrible. Like the experience of trying to buy a hard drive is unbelievably bad. Seagate themselves, I wanted to get a Seagate drive because I know I had this data. They have some recommended sellers, but they don't sell the drives themselves. And then you go on to like Amazon and there's just a bunch of like new sellers, and I have Fake Spot add-on installed, and it will tell me, caution, this seller has bad rating, this seller has joined Amazon. Like, it was just so hard to find a reliable data source just for this one thing I needed. And it made me again just think about the cloud a bit and being like, my God, this would be such a headache if I had to do this for a business. I'm really glad I don't have to do this very often because this is adding no value. This is just wasting time.
Well, if you're doing this for a business, you probably wouldn't be trying to buy the hard drives on Amazon or eBay, right? You'd be going to Dell or HPE and saying, I want a box with 40 terabytes in a RAID 5. That kind of shows how long I've not bought a machine from Dell for, I guess. But you'd be saying that, and they would just ship you the thing with the validated brand new drives in, and you wouldn't worry about it. And if a drive failed, you'd phone them, and within 4 hours, a guy would turn up to swap it over. So I suppose this is a unique home lab problem, isn't it?
I guess. I mean, but you're saying like you'd go straight to the vendor. Is it the case of like you could go straight to Seagate and buy a ton of hard drives from them?
Not straight to Seagate, but everywhere I've worked where I've been buying data center hardware, we've had an account rep at Dell or HP or Fujitsu that we've just been able to phone and say, I want this. I need this CPU, this memory, this disk. And a week later, the box turns up with that hardware in.
Yeah, I think different manufacturers or different server vendors are slightly different in terms of how they will be okay with warranties when you go and stick a bunch of drives from different places in there. But some of them certainly will require you to buy the branded hard drives if you're going to stick them in their chassis or whatever. And that does limit you somewhat.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've had boxes from Dell before where even if you've put a Dell certified drive from the model after or the model before in the machine, you just get an amber health light, meaning all is not okay, even though a 600 gig 10K Seagate disk is a 600 gig 10K Seagate disk.
And I think to your point, Shane, I think Western Digital, I have bought from Direct quite a few times, but you're right. When you go onto the Seagate site, it just points you to other places. So I wonder if that's why they've had this problem and they've put the farm data in there to try and solve this supply chain problem from customers' perspective to make sure they're getting genuine new drives, or if there's something else there that I don't know about.
Yeah, just surprising they don't offer a direct consumer thing. I mean, I'm appreciative of this. Like, even if I was buying directly from them, I think I'd probably just test this data in case I got the wrong drive sent to me. But it just was surprisingly hard to give money for hardware.
So why did you go with Seagate rather than the BD where you could just get it direct?
I think it was because price point was good. And also, it had this farm data. I don't know if Western Digital has the equivalent, but I felt like I had so little confidence in the sellers. Even I bought it inevitably from eBuyer, but I didn't trust them. I don't know what they were going to do with those drives. When I unboxed them, it didn't look as legit as the ones I got from the eBay seller, in that they were just in like bags rather than in like plastic card cases, which the eBay seller gave. So I don't know. Nothing screamed legitimate about any of my purchases. So I was very grateful to have this data. That's actually the only main reason why I picked Seagate.
I'm laughing at that summary of your purchases.
It's just a mess.
I mean, yeah. Every time I buy like, you know, a network switch or something like that, I'll get it on like Home Lab sales or, you know, eBay, whatever. And actually, it does look like that.
So I'll give you some specific numbers because I'm keen to hear your reactions on what you do in the situation. So the drives that I bought were very cheap, admittedly. I bought two Iron Wolf Pros, and I think they were about 160 quid each, right? It's 14 terabytes, 160 quid. And they had a 5-year warranty. Now, the way this particular site works, and I haven't tested it, so I can't tell you if it's any good or not, but the way they work is they say, okay, we're pulling these drives from around the world wherever they're cheapest, and so we manage the returns process if you have any issues. So you get a 5-year warranty from us, even if it doesn't have an upstream warranty from the vendor. So 160 quid. Then when I complained about this farm data, they offered me a 15% discount. So call it 140 quid. If you were offered for 140 quid, 14 terabyte drives with a warranty you thought would probably be honored for the next 5 years, would you take that or would you get a refund so that you could buy actually new drives?
Assuming I had some kind of parity and backup offsite, I'd probably take it because that is quite cheap. But if that wasn't the case, or I wasn't entirely sure they'd honor the warranty, I'd probably send them back.
Agreed. It depends on what stage my home lab is in. Is it panic? I need these drives now. In which case, take it and run with it. See what you can do, right? You can maybe order some new ones soon after. But if I have the opportunity, then yeah, I'd return them.
I just thought it was an interesting question because when I came to replace these drives, I was looking around and you're looking at, I don't know, 250. How much were yours, Shane? How much did you pay for your drives?
They were 230 each for 12 terabyte Iron Wolf Pros.
Yeah, it's really expensive in the UK compared to what you pay in the US. So if you're talking 250 quid, say, for a drive that is about the same as the one I got for 150 quid, then you look at it and you say, well, actually, if this thing only lasts me for 3 years, if I buy a non-pro Iron Wolf, for example, and then it craps out, then that's it. That's your 350 quid gone for 3 years instead of five. So it's a not very satisfying buying position to be left in.
How much does 4 terabytes of S3 storage cost for that same period?
I think this is where you get into these kinds of discussions, right? I think it's really interesting when you think of storage as something that you buy over time instead of a one-off purchase. And I know that Jim on 2.5 Admins is very keen on this idea that you buy something for a time. And I think that's right. You know, I think when you're sitting there as a business or as an individual and you're trying to say, I'm buying this hardware, nothing lasts forever. So you buy it for the period of time that you are wanting to use it, and you effectively rent it for that time, and you make the most of it over that period of time that you've paid for.
Well, that's the way that a business would do things, right? They would buy the thing and amortize it over a 5-year period. And after that, it's worth nothing to them. And they take it and they throw it in the bin and replace it. Now, whether that is the right thing to do from an environmental perspective, we could go back and forth on. But for me, I replace one of the drives in my pool every year around Black Friday when they're cheap and I can get a drive from a reputable seller at a price that I'm happy to pay, and I pull that and I let the array rebuild from parity. That's a habit that I've gotten into over the last 4 or 5 years. And at this point, all of the drives in my array are no more than 4 or 5 years old because there are 4 or 5 disks in the array.
Yeah, I was running a 10-year-old, actually, I think it got to 11 years of power on hours in my NAS for a while. But that's when I had quite a few 3 terabyte drives that I was running. So I had over a set of them quite a lot of storage. But those are now gone. And I think normally now I am running them for less than 5 years anyway. So then it starts to be a more interesting discussion around, you know, the warranties that come with these disks and whether you'll make it to the end of that period. This episode is sponsored by Insta360. Insta360's X5 is the new flagship 360-degree camera with 8K 360-degree video and enhanced low-light performance for all-angle shooting. Improved audio, 185-minute battery life, and user-replaceable lenses make it the most durable 360-degree camera yet. A new mode captures flat and 360-degree video simultaneously with instant MP4 files for sharing, plus 360-degree footage to reframe later. X5 is perfect for action, content creation, and everyday life. X5 has outstanding image quality day and night. The larger sensors deliver the best ever 8K 360-degree video. X5 takes 360-degree night shooting to a new level with unprecedented detail and clarity. With the invisible selfie stick, you can shoot first, point later for those how-did-you-get-that third-person angles, drone-like follow shots, and iconic 360-degree views. The pole disappears from 360-degree footage. Effortlessly edit and share your videos with features like Quick Edit for easy, fast adjustments, and AI Edit for automatic highlight detection and compilation. To get a free 114cm invisible selfie stick worth $24.99 with your Insta360 X5 standard package purchase, go to store.insta360.com and use the promo code HybridCloud. Available for the first 30 standard package purchases only. For more information, be sure to check out the links in our show notes. So Gary, maybe this is a good time for you to tell us about what you do have in your cupboard.
To be honest, I've kept the on-premise hardware in my house very simple. I used to run some stuff that was a lot bigger, but then power bills went up massively. And I've always targeted myself now of keeping what is in the server cabinet under 100 watts, preferably under about 80 watts. So that includes routing, switching, charging the UPS battery, and everything else. So I'm far from running any PowerEdge servers or anything like that in my house at this point. They will resign to the loft because it turns out that those are also really difficult to sell. So my permanently on hardware, and I guess this is where I should explain that I've got two portions of, I guess, my home lab. Some of it is the hardware that I class as home production, and that's the stuff that's permanently on that runs my Plex server and Image and Unify controller and all of that stuff. Then I've got the other side of it, which is the boxes that I use to run offline backups to or do lab stuff with, and that sits in a separate shelf in my garage, which is powered off until I need it. And then I walk in there and I turn it on and there's a Pi KVM connected so that I can do whatever it is I need to do with it. So the permanently on hardware is an M1 Mac Mini with 16 gigs of RAM. That runs pretty well. I kind of flit between running Asahi and macOS on it. Currently it's running macOS because Plex just ran a bit better hardware transcoding wise. That's been there for quite a while. And then what made me end up having the Synology was that I just wanted a stupid simple hardware RAID 5 of 12 terabyte discs that I could just dump my backed up DVD and Blu-ray collection onto and not really think about it too much. So that sits there and presents itself over Samba or NFS to the Mac Mini. Other than that, there's a couple of switches in there. Those are both UFI switches. One is a 24 port 1 gig non-PoE. The other is an 8-port PoE 1-gig switch, and then the firewall is a Unify Cloud Gateway Max, which also does my cameras and stuff at home. So it's sort of just prosumer stuff, really, in the always-on stuff, because I don't want to touch it. The lab box is also a kind of a custom-built box. That is an N100 ITX board, and with 32 gigs of RAM, it then has a RAID 1 of 1 terabyte SSDs for its boot disk, and it's got 4 or 5 8 terabyte disks in a ZFS array that I think is a RAID Z1, and that is kind of offline backups of family photo libraries and things. But it's a box that mostly sits off on a shelf, and I power that on. It's got a Pi KVM connected to it. And if I'm doing any experimenting with VMs or Kubernetes stuff, then that's the box I use. Offsite, an entirely different story, because I've got a super cheap deal on a box from OVH. So that's a Sandy Bridge or Ivy Bridge Xeon with 2 4-terabyte disks in a RAID 1 and 64 gigs of RAM. And that's running Proxmox, and that's sort of where I just throw anything that needs a bit more compute, or I don't want to run in Docker on the Mac Mini.
Very nice.
I feel validated because Gary's setup sounds very similar to what I have. So thank you.
Except that yours is how many watts?
Oh, let's not talk about that. Thankfully, I live in America, ? No, but same thing. Like Unify for network switching, whatever. The only thing I really want that I haven't found is affordable 10 gig networking, or even 25, or whatever else, you know, is up there. But I have yet to find a good switch for that.
Just had a friend messaging me about today Unify releasing some slightly lower end 10 gig switches. And then he sent me a photo of the power brick, which is the size of the entire switch external.
Ouch.
I was like, suddenly I'm not quite so interested. But yeah, it's similar here. I would love some faster switching, because the 1 gig stuff that I've got is fine most of the time. But then if I'm trying to use the Synology as like a large pool of storage to boot VMs from, then it gets really sluggish, even though I've got a 4 gig trunk coming out of that. It's not great.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I actually saw somebody on Mastodon do 100 gigabyte NVMe over a network, and I thought that was absolutely insane. If I had 100 gigabits worth of network speed, then yeah, I'd probably do everything over storage, right? And just have my things be dumb terminals that just network boot all the time. That would be amazing. I'm very excited about this because I'm hopefully in the next like month or so about to get fiber, so I can really make use of this stuff now.
Yeah, I've started noticing the bottleneck now that I've got 1 gig fiber coming into the house. And I'm like, this was never a problem before, because the LAN was always quicker than the connection coming in, and now it's not.
Yeah, that's effectively where I'm at, in that I have decent networking speed coming into my house. I could go up to a gigabit, but just didn't really see the benefits for the use cases I've got. And that means that internal networking has usually been fine. But it would be nice to see something better than a gig inside the house, just because I've got the wires running anyway.
Do you have like Cat 6, I guess, running through your house?
Yeah, I ran a lot of it. I put structured cabling in every house I've lived in for any length of time, I think, including a few that I rented. So Shane, how about you? What are your new hard drives going into?
They're going into some I can't remember the name of it, some HP Pro Elite something or other. Basically like a mini tower that's got about 8 gigs of RAM. I can't remember what CPU is in there, but it's actually handling the disks quite well. The RAM seems fine. And they will be part of the master plan for the home lab, the Kubernetes home lab. I had so many problems trying to get my dodgy, janky NAS to work. The hard drives kept coming out. The USB hard drives kept coming out. So I needed something dedicated and internal, and I could baby a little bit rather than knocking around laptops under a couch in my office. So that's sorted now. And with that basis, I'll start to build out the Kate's home lab. I'll migrate off. I've just got an N100 running Docker, running a bunch of crap, basically plugged straight into a little tiny, like 4-port switch I've got. I might need to upgrade that already, because if I'm going to run a bunch of Kubernetes boxes and they're all going to be running off laptops, I'm probably going to have a couple of laptops all wired directly into a switch of some sort. So I'll need to upgrade that. But yeah, that's kind of the plan. NAS is solid, so got the critical data sort of there. The speeds are okay, but I think probably I'll start complaining about switch speeds if I've got a bunch of Kubernetes clusters mounting data onto a NAS. But I'm kind of waiting till I feel the pain. Like with the NAS and Java, I felt the pain of janky NAS is not a good idea, so I bought stuff. Now I'll just move on to the next pain, which will probably be this network sucks. I cannot access these Kubernetes containers fast enough. I need to get a better switch. So that's the probably the next hardware purchase. It's going to slowly bankrupt me, this whole thing, basically.
Yes, the pit that is HomeLab. I love it.
I do kind of like the idea of the NAS setup with a few of those N100s as worker nodes, though. Like if they were your Kate's workers and then you've got the solid NAS underpinning it with a reasonable network in between, that wouldn't be too bad. I guess the N100s have only got 1 gig NICs in there, so that's where you're going to feel the pain, right?
Yeah, that's true. I did try as well because, Sean, you suggested it as a way to have me not spend any money and just use Longhorn with Kubernetes. Again, the same issue. And it would, I presume, do some clever stuff with like routing traffic to the right hard drives in the right nodes, perhaps. But it was also janky. Again, primarily, don't use USB drives for a NAS. It's just a terrible idea. They don't work no matter what the hell is in front of it.
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
But Longhorn can do a couple smart things where you can say, like, I want this disk to live on the same node that's using it. That way it's not constantly traversing over the network. So it can do that kind of stuff and like auto balance them as it moves around on your cluster for you. So I recommend doing that.
That's cool.
Especially for anything with a database. I've had so many corruptions of SQLite or Postgres databases where they've been going over the network and they've not liked the copy on write or being written out to a cache disk and then eventually being written to a disk, and they've corrupted because the storage server has gotten disconnected at the wrong time or there's been a drop in network packets. Like, just try and keep that stuff local if you can.
I have never had MySQL, MariaDB, or Postgres corrupt. But SQLite, it is going to corrupt, is a matter of time.
Yeah, when I say I've had Postgres do it, I've had it like have to sit and replay wells and stuff, but I've never actually had it break.
I want to ask you how you're going to deploy your cluster. Are you going to use some tool like Terraform? Are you going to look at something new like the Gateway API? How are you going to kind of orchestrate that?
I've got some Helm charts essentially and some customized files in a repo, and I just have Flux reading those. Or do you mean the actual like operating system and all the dependencies?
Yeah.
Right now, I don't know. Maybe Ansible. To be honest, I just wanted to like, it's HomeLab-y. So what I'm trying to learn right now is like that flow of like, okay, I've got an operating system up and running. How do I have it pull from a repo and do all the Kate stuff I need? I know Ansible, so maybe that. But if there's clever new technology I should try out, then definitely open the hearing suggestions when I eventually try to automate this.
Stay tuned.
Going back to your USB drives, I have had USB drives in my backup for quite a while. So I had a Myth TV box back in the day that used to be connected to my TV once upon a time, back in the days of analog TV, and it was doing all the hardware transcoding on the cards and all that sort of thing. And that slowly upgraded over the years, but that's kind of why my Myth TV desktop effectively through the years became my NAS. And so that is in a case that can hold 10 hard drives or something, but it's just a regular micro ATX board inside. And so that's a relatively consumer grade piece of kit that then just has a whole bunch of hard drives attached. I think I've got currently 2 4-terabyte mirrors inside that. And then I've just got these new 2 14-terabyte drives. My idea behind all of this was that currently that then does a ZFS replication off to a friend of mine's house to a Raspberry Pi that's sitting there with just Nebula between them so that it can find it over the network. And then it is doing the replication to these USB hard drives, this USB hard drive that's plugged into it. And I've had that corrupt multiple times, and I've had to replace those portable hard drives that I have attached to that Raspberry Pi, which is always a bit of a pain in the ass. So my intention was to replace it with one of those little N100 QB things that's quite cute so that it's not ugly in his house. And you can stick a couple of mirrored hard drives in there, or you can stripe a, you know,
You can do a ZFS pull over two disks so that you've got a bit more capacity if you're wanting to use up some old hard drives. So my thinking was, when I bought these new hard drives, was that I was going to be able to put the 14 terabytes into my NAS and then free up all my other 4 terabyte drives and stick a couple of those in this thing. And that would give me 8 terabytes of offsite backup storage of my most important stuff. Now, I actually have that using encrypted ZFS, and the jury's a little bit out on the encrypted ZFS, and some people are a little bit concerned around using that as your primary, you know, to have your only backup to be encrypted, because there have been a couple of data loss issues around the encrypted ZFS stuff. And so my intention was to then bring my Raspberry Pi back into my house and then do a round trip with it. So bringing the data back and doing just a simple comparison of the files on a semi-regular basis against the actual data that I've got on my server here. So that was my sort of thinking, was I was going to do that once I had all of these hard drives up and running. So this has been a little bit of a spanner in the works now that the hard drives haven't turned out to be quite what I thought they were.
I think the lesson I've learned from all of this is just have less data. Just be a minimalist, you know, because like, it's such a hassle.
It's right. It kind of becomes a funny thing when you're looking at data as being a cost per gigabyte, cost per terabyte, and you've multiplied that by what you have in your mirrored pool and then your offsite backup. And then if you're doing something, you know, crazy like what I'm doing, bring it all back again, then you've got, you know, 4 copies of that data or whatever that you've got to price in. Mm. And so I buy a lot of UHD Blu-rays and things and then rip them to my server. And that's fine. But, you know, some of those are 100 gigabytes. And that might mean that you're paying, I don't know what it is, you know, £6-9 or something for 100 gigabytes if you're putting that in 4 places.
Yeah, it's not cheap. Although the thing that I said was critical data gets backed up to that offsite or that other box that is sitting in the rack turned off. And I think that's primarily to get around this cost per gigabyte problem. Say I've got 24 terabytes online for my live storage that I can access at all times, but there's probably less than 4 or 5 terabytes of that I couldn't afford to lose. And probably if I had to be really selective, a few hundred gigabytes, certainly less than a terabyte of that I would be really upset if I lost. And that's things like photos of holidays with the kids and things. So I think you do at some point have to take stock of what is important enough for me to deem it to go to whatever my most expensive storage tier is, be that my on-site backup, be that my off-site backup, be that S3 or Glacier or whatever it is. And for me, I've kind of pared that down to certainly less than a terabyte that I really care about being replicated across the kind of 3-2-1 backup methodology. Say the less than a terabyte sits here on the online and offline storage and at my parents' house and at my box in OVH. And then there's kind of that second tier of this would be annoying if I lost it, but not the end of the world. That sits on the on-site backup because I've got faster links to it. And then backups of Blu-rays and things, I mean, I could rip them again if I really wanted to. It's just an investment in terms of time. So they just sit on that array and I hope that the parity of the RAID 5 that I've got is enough.
So basically, Aaron, you don't need 4 copies of that 100 gigabyte copy of Jurassic World.
Yeah, but you probably do need 4 copies of the Cancun 2022 holiday or whatever it was.
What happened in Cancun?
You weren't there?
It's important enough to back up 4 times.
There you go.
That's probably a sensible place for us to wind things up. So if you have any questions or comments, then please do send them to us at show@hybridcloudshow.com. And before we go, I just want to say a quick thank you to our existing supporters on PayPal and Patreon, where on Patreon you can get an ad-free feed of either just this show or all the Late Night Linux shows. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, I've been Aaron.
I've been Gary.
I've been Sean.
And I've been Shane.
See you later.